Today's reading is from Luke. But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
So yesterday, as I said, was this amazing day of inviting neighbors that live right around the church to come and be part of our community. And I am always so amazed whenever we do this event, because it happens every year, at just how many different languages you hear spoken. I mean, you're sitting there and you're hearing languages, and I couldn't even tell you what languages they were because I didn't recognize them. I mean, you're just aware of how diverse and beautiful our community is. And it just kind of, again, my hope is that, this is where I hope this is that we don't walk away from yesterday patting ourselves on the back saying, "We did some good for our neighbor, now we can take a 6-month hiatus or a 12-month hiatus until it rolls around." My hope is that that experience or even just seeing good being done inspires and encourages us to do more all the time. Last week we handed out a chart that looked like this, right? And if you didn't get one last week and you'd like to pick one up, we have some in our office and our welcome centers. The idea was that you saw this tic-tac-toe and you are right in the middle. And the challenge was, can you name the people in the homes or the apartments that live right around you, the 8 homes that are in closest proximity? Can you just simply name who's in them? And my challenge that I gave to you was just to focus on one box this week. And since I give you homework, sometimes as pastors, I feel like, oh, I got to do it myself. So let me tell you what we did this week. And it wasn't actually where I live. It was here at the church. But here, this is actually on my heart for a long time, because I've been aware that there are some neighbors that are coming and going here at the church, and we've done nothing for them. And that's the construction workers that are building the retirement home catty corner from here. They've been renting space. You've probably seen, you know, the fences back since March in the back parking lot and taking up parking spaces, you know? And I drive, you know, I pull into church every once in a while and I see someone walking back and forth, an individual worker. And it just, you know, as this series was coming, I felt this burden on my heart. I said, you know, how can we talk about the art of neighboring? And we haven't even been neighbors to these people who are coming on and off our property every day for months. And so I presented this to the church. Actually, it was over a month ago that I kind of cast this out, and we did nothing with it for 4 or 5 weeks. And so finally, it was like, okay, we got to do it. We got to do it. We're talking about neighboring. And the reason we did nothing is we didn't know where to start, being honest. We just didn't know where to start. We didn't know what time their shifts began. We didn't know time what their shifts ended. We didn't know what they needed, you know, what would be most appreciated. Would it be nice for us to wash their cars, or would that just be a waste of our time? Would they want food? And if they wanted food, then what do they want? And we tried to contact them, you know, because We had at least a number for someone that arranged to contract to, you know, to rent our parking lot. Turns out that number was in St. Louis, and they had no idea for us to contact. And we reached the point where, like, we just got to do something. And we thought, well, what's our love language as a church? It's coffee and donuts. That's what we do really well. And so Wednesday morning, there was a bunch of us, four or five of us here, 6 o'clock in the morning to serve coffee and donuts. Now, the funny thing was, that's not when their shift begins. We sat there for like 30, 45 minutes with just nothing to do, just twiddled our thumbs. But here's the funny part. Once we were just out there in that back part of the parking lot, we started to notice some needs. For instance, their trash can was overflowing with trash. No one had been emptying it. We're like, okay, well, we'll take care of that while we sit here. Josh Sweeney and I tried to, take care of the trash. We couldn't because it was so full of rainwater. Like, you could barely lift it. We tried to pull the bag out, and it started ripping. Like, okay, let's not do that. So we went and got bags, and then we just thought, well, we'll at least pick up all the overflowing trash that's, you know, around that area. We discovered as we did that, okay, they like Arby's because there's tons of Arby's stuff. Like, I was like, okay, note, next time, not coffee and donuts. We're bringing them Arby's next time. And eventually, about, 6:45, their shift starts at 7, we now know that, they started coming in. And we got to know their names and express kindness and welcome, and it was kind of like, gosh, this is good. It was worth doing. And my point is this, is that, we've been giving you this challenge to reach out to your neighbor, and you may not know where to start or how to begin. Just do something. Don't wait for perfect knowledge. Do something with the knowledge you have. Whatever it is that you're good at doing, offer it to your neighbors. And even in that imperfect attempt, you start a connection. You start to get to know who they are. It can grow from there. You following me? Let me give you what we really are going to challenge you guys to do. Think about this. Throw a block party. Do a grill out. Invite everyone from your neighborhood. If you don't live outside, if you're in an apartment, think about what you could do. I know one pastor who did this. He said, I didn't have time to print invitations, so I just pulled the grill in front of the house when I knew people would be coming home, and I just started grilling. And he said, sure enough, people smelled hot dogs and brats and burgers, and they came. And he had name tags so that every person got a name tag. And he said it so that, well, because you may not know the other neighbors, but really, in truth, he didn't know everyone's names. But it was a way to get the ball rolling. As I heard that story, I thought about someone in our church, right in this community, Missy Hughes, who does something very similar to this. And so we sent a crew, our videographer, to capture her story. Check this out.
My name is Missy Hughes, and I live on Meridian Street, near the Children's Museum, and I would say that community means all of Indianapolis to me. So some people may recognize me from playing guitar at church, but what they may not know is that I'm also a hospitality enthusiast. So I do this thing called Spaghetti Night and host it about once a month. It's super fun, very simple concept, but basically I make the spaghetti, other people bring the sides, and the more the merrier. So it's all about welcoming people and trying to connect them with other friends here in our community. What makes me excited about hosting people is the opportunity to make people feel a part of something. I think a lot of people are very lonely and are just desperate to know people and feel loved. Invitation is everything, even just an interaction. A kind word or learning someone's name. It doesn't have to be hard, even though it can often be awkward. Sometimes being an extrovert makes it a little bit easier, but the art of neighboring is messy. But any kind of art is beautiful, especially if you're persistent, and eventually it can lead to something great.
So all those images were actually from last night's spaghetti dinner. So if you one night when I have spaghetti, catch Missy here at church and say, can I come? I'm sure she'd be glad for you to come. But the thing is you don't have to, it doesn't have to be complicated. Just something simple. And I love how Missy said it. People are wanting to be part of something. They're wanting to be invited. And any single one of us can make that simple invitation. But the reality is that it costs us something, right? Like if I were to say, do what Missy did or throw a grill out, you start probably calculating, well, how much food and what's all that going to cost? Or maybe like me, you look at your calendar and you say, I don't know when I'm going to have a free weekend to do that. But here's the thing. Loving our neighbors will require us to change our pace and our priorities. We can't just keep the same pace. We can't keep the same priorities and do this well. That's why we're telling the story of the Good Samaritan all 3 weeks that we're doing this series. Because the Good Samaritan is someone who had to sacrifice his agenda. We don't know what agenda the people on that road to Jericho had. But we do know that if you were walking from Jerusalem to Jericho, you had an agenda in mind. I mean, it was kind of the place where there would be a travel advisory, right? Like people don't naturally go from Jerusalem to Jericho. It was risky, it was dangerous. So if you were there, you had a purpose. And we don't know what purpose any of them had, but we know that the priest and the Levite, when they saw the man who was beaten to the side, they did not set aside their agenda. Whether it's because they were afraid of getting hurt themselves, whether it's because afraid of losing their ritual cleanliness. Instead of helping him, they moved to the other side of the road and they continued on their way. Only the Samaritan set aside his agenda. And we don't know what the agenda was, because as soon as he saw his neighbor, suddenly his neighbor's need became his agenda. And we want you, I have the what behind me. I want you to just listen to the verbs of what the Samaritan did. First, can we just scroll through these really fast? First, he came near his neighbor, saw his need, was moved with pity. He went to him. He bandaged his wounds. He poured oil and wine, costly substances. He put him on his own animal, brought him to shelter, took care, took out money, gave it to the innkeeper, promised to come back and repay any extra expenses. 12 verbs. And only after he's done all that does he retake up his own agenda and leave his friend. And even then, he promises that man will never be far from his thoughts. He's going to come back and repay whatever extra had been spent. I had a seminary professor who used to ask this question, and he'd say, where would you draw the line? What would be enough for you to demonstrate love for your neighbor? Would you stop, when you brought him to shelter? Is that good enough? You took him somewhere, you handed him off to someone else. Is that where you'd stop? Or maybe you'd stop with, just bandaging his wounds. You wouldn't put him on your animal and carry him somewhere. Or maybe some of us stop and we're just, we draw near and we see the need and we're moved with pity, but we don't do anything with that compassion. Some of us don't even get to first base. We don't even come near. We don't even see the needs that exist around us. But this Samaritan, he goes the distance to love his neighbor. He shows us that loving our neighbor requires an investment of money, an investment of time, an investment of our heart. So the what is loving our neighbor? The how. How do we love our neighbor? Well, it requires an investment of love, of time, and money. Think about what the Samaritan sacrificed. He sacrificed time and he sacrificed money. Let me ask you this question. Of those two sacrifices or investments, which is the harder for you to give? I would wager a bet that for most of us, giving our time is the harder thing than just writing a check, giving money. For most of us, that is the harder thing. In fact, a couple years ago, New York Times did a research project. They polled 4,400 Americans of every stripe, race, socioeconomic background, 4,400 Americans, and they asked them a question. If you could have more time or more money, which would you choose? You're probably thinking what you would choose. And remember, I wagered a bet that most of us would choose more time, but that's not right, actually. In their survey, they found 64% of Americans chose that they would rather have more money. That blew me away. I thought, really? But then it goes on to say that those who chose time, on the whole, reported greater levels of happiness and satisfaction. Pastor John Ortberg says this, that love and hurry are fundamentally incompatible, because love always takes time, and time is the one thing that hurried people do not have. Have you ever tried to carry a conversation with someone when they're in a hurry? It's just miserable, right? Have you ever been the one in a hurry trying to carry a conversation with someone? I had that happen to me 2 days ago. A person came in my office. I had a meeting I had to get to. I had some work I had to get done. They're trying to carry a conversation. I was hurried. I ended up snapping a little bit because I didn't handle it well, and I realized no love was expressed in that conversation. I did a poor job because I was hurried. There's a famous study that took place at Princeton Theological Seminary. There's a picture of Harvard behind me because I thought it was at Harvard, but then I did the research and I realized, oh, it's Princeton, so just ignore that. So at Princeton, they took seminary students at the Theological Seminary, and they brought they kind of picked a random sampling of students, and they told them, we want you to prepare a lecture about the Good Samaritan, and then go across campus to the religion department and deliver your lecture to a group of undergraduate students. And they gave them some time to prepare, and then they sent them on their way. Now, as they had to cross campus, the researchers placed intentionally in each of their path someone who was in obvious distress, who was coughing, keeled over, laying on the ground. I mean, someone who was in obvious distress. And the question was, would these students stop and help them? Would they set aside their agenda? Now, here's the only variable they had, is that one group of students, they gave more than twice the amount, they gave 30 minutes, more than twice the amount of time they needed to get across campus. The other group, they gave 10. And they wanted to see who would stop. As you might imagine, those who were in a hurry, on the whole, stopped less than those who had more than twice the amount of time they needed to get from point A to point B. In fact, researchers said on multiple occasions, those who were in a hurry literally stepped over the person who was in distress because they were in a hurry to present a lecture about the Good Samaritan. And I didn't tell you this part. The research study was done in the 1970s. So that was before phones and devices. You know, like think about how many people walk around now just like this. And my point is, how many of us, because we're in a hurry, don't even see our neighbor's need? This study is based off a book by Dave Runyon and Jay Pathak, and they lay out three lies in relation to time that they think that to me hit a lot of, kind of hit me personally. They said, you know, we believe in three lies when it comes to time. The first is that things will settle down someday. We tell ourselves, once we get past this deadline, once we get past this season of life, it'll slow down. But it doesn't. There's a Haitian proverb that says, beyond mountains, there's more mountains. Once we get past this season, once we get past this deadline, there's something else that's going to keep us going at the same pace. It doesn't ever slow down. A second lie we tell ourselves is, it's just a little bit more will be enough. If I just, you know, reach this level of income, if I just do a little bit more, remember how many people trade more money for more time. If I just get a little more, then I can slow down. But that more, that enough, always is just a little bit out of reach. And the third lie that we tell ourselves is that everybody lives this way. I mean, we know that we're hurried and stressed and frenzied, and we know we're not really loving our neighbor, but we tell ourselves, well, everybody's this way. Because we look around and we see everyone living at the same pace. But can you remember a time in your life when it wasn't so frenzied and fast-paced? I mean, do you remember what life was like before smartphones came along? I know some of you don't, but I mean, do you remember when there wasn't texting and social media? Remember when there wasn't DVRs? And the thing is all these things have come along and they were meant to save us time, but they didn't save time at all. They just sped it up. And not everyone around the world lives at the same pace we do. Some of them not by choice. I've been blessed over the course of my life to work in Haiti. And let me tell you, the people in Haiti do not live at the same pace we do. And it's not necessarily by choice. They don't have as much money as we do, but they have more time. They have time to know their neighbors, to go and sit on each other's front porch. And because they have time, they build this network, this social network that in many cases is their safety net, the kind of safety net that our society doesn't have. This is a picture of Sister Simone and Sister Carmel, two of the sisters that Jamel and I have worked with in Haiti. And I remember the first time they came and spent time with us in the U.S. And we kind of took them around, showed them everywhere. And when it was over, Sister Simone, the one on the left, she said, David, I like yeah, I like America just fine. I'd never want to live here. I said, why? She goes, tout le monde presse. Everyone's pressing. Yo occupé. They're busy. They're occupied. They're not available. They don't know each other. I wouldn't want to live in a place like that. Right after the earthquake happened, you can see the rubble in this picture. Right after the earthquake happened, I felt this incredible stress of all the things that needed to be rebuilt and done. I mean, homes, the orphanage, the school. And I was like a man possessed, you know. I mean, I was wound in knots internally. And whenever we take teams down there, we were taking on these huge projects of building schools in 1 week. I mean, they were huge. And because they were big, I didn't do the usual stuff. I didn't take kids to the beach. I didn't go to neighbors' homes and sit and drink coffee. I didn't do any of that. And didn't go down to the orphanage as much and play with the kids. And I remember at the end of the second of those trips, one of the kids said to me, and they said, David, you've changed. And I said, what? And they said, you don't love us. And I thought, what? I mean, that's why I'm here. I mean, I'm building a school for you. I'm building, you know, this is for you. Of course I love you. And they said, no, they didn't experience that as love. What they really needed to experience love was attention. They needed my unhurried presence. That's what people need, is our unhurried presence. Now, here's the great irony. Sociologists point out that at least in American society, we have this crazy reversal that it's, you would think that the people who have the greatest income have also the most disposable time. I mean, they have time, they have resources, they could afford more leisure, but that's actually not the case. Sociologists have studied this and found that at least in America, income and available time are inversely related. Those who have more money have less time and vice versa. Because we make this trade, we choose money and we give away our time to acquire. And this is why I get back to the Great Samaritan. I think he had a comparative advantage over all the others because the Samaritan was from the lower class. He knew what it was like to depend on this safety net of his neighbors. He knew what that felt like. He knew what it was to be vulnerable, to be passed by. And maybe he had more disposable time. Maybe he had less of an agenda. You see, why would the Samaritan stop? I mean, why would he go to these great lengths to love his neighbor? I think it's because the Samaritan knew what it was like to be vulnerable, to be passed by, to be hoping that someone would recognize him. So when he passed by this man who was beaten and broken, he saw his humanity. He saw his need, and he stopped to help him. Rob and I were talking about this parable, the Good Samaritan. He says, you know, there's a story from 25 years ago, the L.A. riots. Do you guys remember the L.A. riots? It was after the policemen who had beaten Rodney King were acquitted, and L.A. erupted. I mean, with just pent-up anger, very, very similar to what we're seeing in our current moment. I mean, just anger and frustration. And one of the most enduring images from those couple of days was a man named Reginald Denny, who was a trucker, who was pulled out of his truck and nearly beaten to death because his skin was white. But what's amazing about this story, why it still endures to this day, is that Reginald Denny wasn't killed. He was saved by four African Americans, men and women, who came out of their cars, who came out of their homes to help him. One of these people, the guy on the far left, he said he was watching it on the news where they had live helicopter feed, and he recognized that was his corner right outside his house. He bolted out of his house to come stand beside those who were trying to save Reginald Denny. They wasn't white people, because they were huddled safely in their cars or in their homes. They were afraid. It was people who shared the same frustration with those who were rooting, with those, that was loud. It was people who shared the same frustrations with those who were looting, who were just as burdened with the problems, but they recognized that this was not the path, and they risked their own lives to save someone else. You see, when humans are at our most ugly, isn't it true that you also see that's where some people, where the best of our nature is also on display? Some men beating and grabbing a man because of the color of skin, others stepping forward to defend him because they recognize his humanity. One man beaten and broken, lying on the road, and two people pass by because they don't want to touch him. And someone else who's from the lower class goes the distance to save him. This is what the cross is about. It's where the worst of humanity is on display. But in contrast to the anger and the confusion of the mobs, you have God's love and God's beauty standing out in contrast. We worship a God who goes the distance to love us. There is no stopping point, no length to which Christ will not go. He went to the cross to die for us. That's how much he loves us. That's how much he loves our neighbor. And he calls us to be bearers of that love, to grab hold of people and not let go. One of my favorite pastors, a guy named Keith Naylor, he's not famous. He works on the streets in Atlanta, working with people who are drug addicts and victims of human trafficking, people of different sexual orientation and sexual identity, and people who feel so estranged from the church. And he says, you know, my ministry, he summarizes it this way. He says, I just go around and I hug people and I hold on to them. And as I hear the brokenness of their lives, it breaks my heart. Sometimes I don't even know if I can hold on, but I know this, that God is holding on to me as I hold on to others. And through me, God is holding on to them. May we love our neighbor in a way that communicates the truth that God holds us and will never let go.